Welcome to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And Cindy, we're getting into the swing of the season, right?
I know, it's so exciting. And it was snowing this morning out at the farm.
Yeah, we're live today on WIPR. You can reach us with your calls, comments, questions, 410-662-8780. Toll free is 866-661-9309. Or email us if you like, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And the topic today, as we're swinging into the season, is the big hits and the big flops
it happens.
of your cooking life. So whether you're a chef and you need to get something off your chest, or you're the
you mean a professional
home
chef?
Cook, yeah,
right,
yeah,
right,
or a home cook that you know has guests coming over and they're trying to exercise the demons of failed soufflés and all these kinds of things, and maybe we can help you fix the item or
would love to
help you figure out where you went wrong.
Well, it's fun to talk about things like that too and we'll work it through.
And we'll talk about our successes and also failures.
Sure. Yeah. So what's your biggest success? Would
food
you say?
Wise? Yeah. You know, like a surprise?
Yeah.
Surprise hit?
Yeah. Yes.
Ooh. Wow, I didn't expect to start with that question. I'm a relatively confident person. I've not been that surprised that something was that successful.
Oh my God! Well, that's an honest comment. You're so humble.
You plan for things to be successful.
All right. So
I mean, I can definitely think of.
Okay.
I can think of a million. Come on, German family. I'm used to
discipline.
If you got a 99, so you got something wrong, right?
Right.
If you had 99 on a test, my grandmother asked me what my score was, and I stuck in my head from when I was 7 years old.
Wow.
So
it's a little tough. It's a tough way to grow up, man.
Yeah, but it's fun to pursue perfection.
Of course.
But I mean, like unexpected.
We have a couple of those in my family too.
Unexpected hit. You know what's
okay? Let's reapproach. One of your favorite things you've ever made that everybody has really enjoyed? Let's look at it that way.
We made some years ago for a family meal.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, something
for family meal.
For a family meal in one of the restaurants.
Okay.
It was something that looked like a tortilla española, but we had gotten all of this really good zucchini, and it was a dry summer. The zucchini were nice and firm, and we made it in one of the giant rice pans, the big paella pans. And layered it, you know.
Zucchini.
Zucchini, egg.
Eggs.
Manchego. More zucchini, more eggs, like layers and layers and layers and layers. And baked it like a tortilla española. And finished that in the big wood-burning oven.
One of my favorite things that has ever been made at that restaurant.
And so we put it up for family meal. And
And
everybody loved it.
How could they not, man? That thing is delicious.
So I turned to Mario, and I say, "Hey, Mario, everyone loves it. Why don't we sell it?"
Definitely.
And that's, we put these zucchini cakes on the menu, and they had we took Greek yogurt and just seasoned with a little bit of lemon oil and fresh lemon juice. And
how do you make lemon oil?
A little bit of fresh mints. From the peels. You have to extract from the peels.
Right. Okay.
And a little bit of extra virgin olive oil, but you bake that guy.
Okay, so let's back it up because it really is a great thing. So start over quickly. How do you do it? Layers of thin slices of zucchini that you probably did on, right?
Yeah.
Asian mandolin.
Exactly right. Mm-hmm. Thin slices, with a knife, honestly.
Okay.
But lay them into a pan that's for baking. You'll probably use a gratin dish at home, something like that. You layer them in there. You make eggs like you would for an omelet mix.
Right.
But make it cream heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And season that with what you like. At that point, it was like a little bit of Calabrian chili, and then we layer it in between the zucchini manchego cheese, sliced very thin, and then covered everything with the egg mixture, and baked that guy.
Yeah, it's so good, and it's very delicate It's something that you must put foil or something on it because it's got to steam itself, I suspect.
You got to whip those eggs.
Yeah.
And you got to, and you have to have it at the right temperature.
I've never asked Mario how he makes that. I just ask him to make it for me. That's funny that you brought that up. I didn't realize you would say that because I have asked him to make a pan of that for me for Christmas before when my family was coming because, I love that. So actually, there was a time where I would walk into the restaurant and he would hand me a piece of that. He knows how much I love that dish.
That's
cool. I didn't realize that's where it came from.
That's from 2005.
Very cool.
From Family Meal.
Family Meal is a good thing. Well, and that's the thing. It's a time where you have to work with an expensive food pretty much, because we're feeding a lot of people when we do Family Meal. And
you want it to be good and healthful, happy, popular.
That's a good way to play with some stuff too. Yeah.
So I confess to having sold many thousands of orders of zucchini cakes, nice fluffy zucchini cakes. With that fabulous Greek yogurt topping.
Yeah, I love that. It's really good.
Based on cooking it for staff.
Yeah.
So, and you can reach us with your stories, 410-662-8780. We're live today. Toll free, 866-661-9309, or email us, foremanwolf@wypr.org. And I'm going to be, you're so kind to go for the positive, but we all know that I'm the negative guy, so.
Mm-hmm.
What surprised you? What dish have you done, even in the last couple of years?
Mm-hmm. And
you have a very, very strong hit versus miss ratio.
Mm-hmm.
Strong as it gets. But what dish have you done that you thought was going to be really appealing? And it never got momentum.
Well, and it's interesting because
it just didn't work.
And actually, I've been thinking about it. I think it's more of a level of... either what people want to deal with when they're in a nice restaurant or their perception of something more than anything in that really, truly making sardines, getting in fresh sardines. And I just put them on the menu recently, so this is why it's in my mind, because they just sold very, very well. And I had not one person send them back and say, would you debone this for me? Thank goodness. Well, hey, it's happened in the past.
5 years ago, that would not have been the case.
Exactly. Well, that's it. So I think almost more than anything, for me, it's an excitement for the fact that I can put something so gorgeous on the menu and do a beautiful, simple plate up for it that's the perfect accompaniment, which is hand-chopped pecelino olives, chiffonata basil, a little bit of finely chopped shallot, great extra virgin olive oil that's more fruity, pretty than necessarily rich and olivey, or has a lot of depth, and a little bit of fresh pepper, and a little bit of arugula and upland cress on the plate. Just, like bright, fresh, green stuff on the plate with this beautifully sort of charred, grilled sardine that's super, super fresh. And whole, of course, a whole fish. And it just did really well. So that's, that's not necessarily that I'm not saying I've not ever made something that didn't work, but that is something that was always a hard sell before. So that's sort of one of the first things that comes to mind. One of the things that I made that did not work out and something that I've always worked very hard to perfect are my flans or the what is called a flan custard.
Yeah, you make
whether
great,
it's a
you make
savory, whether it's a savory one or it is a sweet one, which when you think sweet, it would be say a creme caramel. And I know one of the first times I was doing a wine dinner, I really wanted to do a poached pear creme caramel, and I was very concerned about how much can I put in and have this custard work out. So oftentimes I think if I've made a mistake or had to experiment a little bit further with something that I was making, it often had to do with a scientific process such as a pastry. But there've certainly been times when I first was starting to cook that maybe I might have paired, the wrong herb or the right spice, wrong spice with something. And I think those are the things that I get asked the most about, what really goes with what? And that is the process of having experience, eating and cooking that you learn that.
How about at the holidays? As there's something that you were making for,
Well, I've certainly wanted to shoot myself before, by having family there. First of all, I was just...
This is an NPR station. Be careful.
I said shoot.
Okay.
I really, really, really wanted to do a lot of wonderful, easy food one year for my family. And I only have one oven. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just like, I feel like I can never make
would
my
make
home
a bunch
situation.
Of casseroles?
Well, that's it. You know, it's like, oh, God. You know,
well, you did. You made a bunch of casseroles.
Oh, sure. Well, when you say casserole, you might want to define that a
I'm
little
just
bit.
Doing,
but,
I'm
you know,
just
if it's a potato
a
gratin, it's braised beef short ribs, it's roasted root vegetables, it's all these things that I'm like, oh, yeah, I can do this all so easily. I can make it ahead. It's going to go in the oven. And I'm like, yeah, could I use the people next door's oven, please? Because, I mean, really, none of my kitchens has ever really been big enough to have a second oven. Or the layout was already done before the house was purchased. And, you know, I'm not ripping something out to put in another oven.
That has to be a common thing that happens to home cooks.
You
get ambitious. You invite
people. Cooking at home.
You prepare everything. And then when it comes time to get it done,
you're like, oh, God.
I don't have
room for all this.
You don't have enough firepower cooking wise.
Yeah, right? That's why I'm like, oh, you have to have a grill because you can solve so many problems cooking at home. I mean, you know, I just built a kitchen in my farmhouse, and I still don't have all the things that I wish I had in there. And frankly, it costs too much money. So we're all in the same, I suspect most people are in the same situation. You have to be practical about what you're building in your kitchen if you do have the opportunity to build one. And, you know, I saved the old stove this time from the old kitchen in my house and put it in my laundry room. And we had to put a special outlet in there, but believe me, it was worth it to get it wired to put that thing in there. Because now
clothes,
I have a second.
Roast chickens.
Exactly. And it's one of those, you know, I don't
if
even know what they're called, but the top
like
of it.
If your sweaters all smell like roast chicken, it's probably a lot nicer anyway.
Plenty of ventilation in there. There's like four windows in that room, so there may not be a hood vent, but no problem. No problem venting.
Your sweaters definitely smell like roast chicken. That's exactly what's going on.
But it's so nice to have a second oven. And frankly, they're four burners, so it's one of those glass tops, whatever those, you know, those smooth top stoves.
Why don't you put a wood burning grill in your bathroom?
Yeah, why don't you? Okay,
you know,
so
take
anyway,
a shower.
What are you talking
shampoo?
About? Anyway, so all right, where are we going to go from here? Flops and hits.
Flops.
Okay.
Holiday flops.
I think I really.
That's. I mean, I can think of one sort of pathetic one. I know how to make risotto. I know how to make risotto from scratch.
Of course.
Nicely.
Of course. But you were cooking at home or somebody else's home.
I was cooking at home. And I love to entertain people. I really don't like people in my space.
Oh, that's so funny because I don't either. I don't either. I can't stand to talk to people when I'm cooking.
And they want to, and it's, hey, so blah-de-blah-de-blah.
And you're like, oh, God.
And I'm like, and my brain is on the, like, I have this one critical moment where I have to change the temperature on this, and I have to add that, you know, and a blah, and a blah, and a blah. And I just want to take a big bag of blah and, like, light it on fire and stomp on it, you know? So it was a year we had fantastic black truffles.
So I made
a risotto.
Oh, my gosh.
I made a little truffle oil to kind of lace into it.
Right.
And then plenty of truffles to garnish it with. Mm. And the risotto that I made, based on the conversation I had with the four people that came in and talked to me while I was making the risotto, was pretty much akin to, like, refried beans in texture. It was just gummy. And awful.
Oh, gosh.
And I had, you know, like a mortgage payment's worth of black truffle
right?
to put on these
exactly.
refried beans.
Oh, boy.
I felt like a really hot shot.
Yeah.
Welcome to my home where I'm serving you wallpaper glue with mushrooms on it.
Right. Well, it's funny that you said
God,
that.
Bless
it's funny
America.
That you said
That's...
that because Jane Marianne and I were just doing a video in my kitchen at my house. And while I was doing the video for her, with her, you know, we start talking, and of course she's there asking me questions because we're supposed to be doing this recipe that I did for her for this article she did. And the next thing I know, you know, I'm
let me
turn on my pan.
What did you burn?
And my pan is like 8,000 degrees when I go to put the butter in it. And of course, you know, the video doesn't stop shooting when this is happening. And here's professional chef Cindy Wolf, you know, burning the butter in the pan. And I'm like, well, you know what? It happens to everybody. And that is it. You have to concentrate when you're cooking. And I said to her, you know, I really don't like it when people are talking to me in my kitchen privately afterwards.
That's great. Please always
afterwards,
do that with
not
journalists.
During the video.
When we come back on Foreman Wolf on Food and Wine, we're live today. Please give us a ring. Tell us about your hits and flops and holiday dramas. 410-662-8780. 866-661-9309 is the toll free. Or you can email us, ForemanWolf@WIPR.org. Welcome back to Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
And we have a caller on the line, Susan in Elkridge. Go ahead.
Hi, Tony and Cindy. Very nice to speak with you.
Hey, Susan. How are you?
Hi. Charleston is my inspiration.
Oh, thank you.
For cooking most fabulous food I've had. It's I attempt to even come close to that. I'm just astounded by your food. I'm in the midst of rehabbing a kitchen.
Cool.
And heaven help me. And yes, there is a second oven that's going up. It's sitting in the middle of the floor right now.
Awesome.
And I want to know what you all think. So many friends are saying to me, even though it's a good sized kitchen, take down that wall between the dining room and the kitchen. And I'm just like, if this is a fad. I mean, I shoo people out of my kitchen. I'm multitasking. I don't want to talk to people. I've got to focus. I don't want them to see me sweat.
I agree completely.
And, I think it's a fad. What do you think? I'm just hang up and listen.
I'm just mean to people that come in my kitchen.
But that's
the fun.
Well, and it's interesting that you say it's a fad. I never thought of it that way. But like every single home design show shows you breaking down all the walls between the living room and the dining room and the kitchen, and it is a little bit. I'm with her, Susan. I totally don't want to see people see me sweating while I'm cooking and all the things that might be going on. But whether they're positive or maybe tiny bit negative, but I do
like burning butter.
Yeah. Right. But I do like the idea of having as open of a space as possible. So I think that's the decision that that you have to make, Susan, is do you have enough room without, removing the wall between the dining room and the kitchen? And also, I can't encourage you more to have that second oven. That's great that you have it because it's going to make a huge difference in your ability to cook and produce. What's up there, Tony?
I have an email from our cookbook program.
Mm-hmm.
Dear Cindy and Tony, we enjoy listening to your episode on cookbooks. I wanted to share a great book that my wife discovered called Rustico. I've never been to Italy and so had a skewed view of Italian cuisine. My two favorite recipes so far have been testarole with pesto from Liguria and orecchietti with tomatoes and arugula from Apulia. Favorite recipe name is strangolopretti, pre-stranglers. Still searching the web for exactly how this type of gnocchi got its name. Any recommendations for unusual Italian dishes? Oh, Juan, thanks. Yeah,
that's nice.
Rustico is a great book.
That's cool.
You
had mentioned that there are very few, really, there are very few Italian, particularly regional books.
I find myself much, there's an old one, if you can find it, still in print somewhere, from Ada Boni called... just look for Ada Boni. It's just Italian regional cooking. I think the copy I have is in the late 60s.
Hmm.
And that's one of the only ones
in English.
And that's in English, yeah.
That's great.
But large majority of the Italian books I really love on Italian food are all in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
The strangolopretti, it's funny, there's strozzopretti, which are priest chokers, and that's a pasta shape. And mm-hmm. strangolopretti... It's not actually a gnocchi. It's actually a kind of canoodle.
Oh, I love canoodle.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they make those. Those are the kind of canoodles that they make up in the Valtellina, and some parts of the Western Alto Adige, but really in the Valtellina in northernmost Lombardia, right by the Swiss border. So that's the mystery on the strangolopretti, and there's usually some seasonal other ingredient in there, whether it's spinach in the autumn or nettles in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
It might just be cheese.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the story on that. Recommendations for unusual Italian dishes we could do. Please keep listening, Patrick in Austin, Texas, because we'll probably do about 10 programs on those over the years.
Yeah.
So
next week I'll have to give everybody my mother's recipe for eggnog. It's so good. And I think that's a fun one to have for the holidays and to be able to make your own eggnog just have it. You can make it, that morning and have it for that evening. I think particularly on Christmas Eve, it's nice to have that. That was always a tradition in our family.
I can't recall a very serious eggnog flop when I was a kid. We had a dog. We had a poodle whose name was Cognac, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe something in that name kind of was part of his personality. We all went into dinner, and he started knocking
out
the eggnog that was left on the coffee table.
Ooh.
And, yeah, probably pretty dangerous, but it seemed pretty funny at the time that he really kind of struggled walking.
Oh, no.
And then he just went and took a nap underneath the piano.
Oh, my. Poor dog. Wow.
Poor guy.
And that just warns you never to leave the eggnog out or drink it all, eat it all. Well, I like my mom's because she would serve it in punch cups and give you a spoon. That's how. I mean, it was almost mousse-like in consistency. So very good stuff.
So we have another email from Sarah in Owings Mills. And we are live. You can call us 410-662-8780 if you like, or toll-free 866-661-9309. If you have any suggestions for the Chef's Challenge, how to make it a little more difficult for Chef Cindy Wolf, I'd greatly appreciate it. You can reach us on those lines or foremanwolf@wypr.org, because countdown to the Chef's Challenge is, probably 15 minutes, something like that.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's... They keep it extra cool in the studio so she doesn't sweat during the Chef's Challenge. We have an email from Sarah in Owings Mills. I shot for the stars last Christmas and tried to make beef Wellington for my family visiting from out of town.
My favorite.
The beef turned out dry, and the dough was soggy.
That's interesting. I wonder what dough she used.
Any tips or one I feel confident to try?
I would love to tell her a tip because I make that. Actually, the first time I ever made it, I made it for Robert Parker. And I'm very proud of that, and I love this dish. And I make it a little differently. And you don't have to make it this way before Tony says something about the fact that I'm about to tell you about truffles and foie gras, two of the more expensive ingredients you could possibly work with. But Wellington is traditionally made with a foie gras forcemeat. I actually, instead of doing that, I just sear pieces of foie gras. So my process is I buy a beef tenderloin. I use only the center or the filet mignon part of the tenderloin. So that's just at the base of the head end of the animal to the sort of the top of where it starts to really get tiny at the tail end of the animal. And season it with salt and pepper. And I put it on my grill. You can put it in a hot pan on the stove, or if you have a grill, I strongly suggest doing it this way because it's much easier and you get a little bit of smoke aspect to it. So I sear it all the way around on the grill, and just to sear it, just to get some flavor, just to brown the outside of it. And then I put it on my cutting board. I butterfly it. I open it. I season it with salt and pepper. And meanwhile, I sear pieces of foie gras that are about maybe a quarter of an inch thick. Sear them very quickly, super hot pan, both sides, take them out, put them directly onto some sort of cold pan. So let's say you have like a cookie sheet you could pop in your refrigerator, your freezer. That's a perfect thing. Or I use a sizzle pan at the restaurant. And so it immediately stops you from losing any more fat and it cools it down immediately. And it has to be cold for you to put it inside of the tenderloin anyway for health reasons. So once the foie gras has cooled down, then I lay it all through the center of the butterflied beef tenderloin, and then I slice fresh black winter truffle and completely lay that in and cover the entire interior of the. It's just one layer, and then I.
So if you want to if you want a visual, think of the beef tenderloin being opened up like a big submarine sandwich roll, and then being filled in on the inside.
On one side, on the bottom side, I put the foie gras on the truffle.
And then you're flipping it over on
or
it.
You close it.
Submarine.
Right. Yeah. And I lay out a piece of puff pastry. And that's why I'm surprised if her beef was dry that the pastry. I wonder what she used for a pastry, because with puff pastry, if your beef was actually dry, your pastry would have burned.
I think people sometimes use pie crust.
Okay. Well, I would use puff pastry and lay it out, put the beef in, wrap it up. And this is a little bit hard to describe, but you basically want to cover, obviously, the entire beef. So you pull it up, pull the other side over, brush it with egg wash, which is a whisked egg with a little bit of water, and just use your pastry brush and brush all the outside of the pastry except for what's sitting on the bottom of the pan. The bottom side you don't brush. And seal it, pull the ends up and over, brush that again. And now you're going to flip it over and put it on I strongly suggest putting it on a rack on a sheet pan, and then you brush the top, and you can do a little decorative work. You could cut out circles, stems, make flowers, or any sort of little design. You could use little cutters if you wanted to put stars on there for Christmas. I mean, you could do anything you wanted to cut out pastry and put that on top, brush it again with egg, and then you bake it in the oven. And I buy beef tenderloins that are 5 pounds and down when they're whole. So you are, at this point, probably talking about maybe three and a half pounds of meat. This will take, I would start my oven at 425. I would leave it in there for about 7 minutes at 425, then crank it down to 350. And that's a convected oven. And it takes about 12 more minutes. So the hardest part about doing a Wellington is making sure that it's cooked to the right temperature. And every time I make one, I get a little, I will admit, a little panicky, because it is so unbelievably important to me that this is perfect. And you can't tell what's happening, and you can't put a thermometer in there. You can't break the crust. You can't touch it. So it is really something that if you want to do it, you have to experiment with it, because your oven is different from my oven. The piece of beef may be bigger than the piece of beef I had. All these things have, you know, an effect. And but it is one of the best dishes ever. That pastry, with all the foie gras fat that falls into that pastry as it bakes, and the juice from the meat. Oh my gosh, almost my favorite part is the pastry. I eat the ends when I'm cutting it, like we all do, is when we're cooking. We, you know, there's always some scrap that you're going to, you're the cook. You're the one that's going to eat that. Sometimes it's the best part.
The Scooby snack.
Yep. Okay. Scooby snack. Right.
Exactly. So what do you think was the biggest, like, holiday special that you ever put on that people went bananas over, that you thought might have been hokey?
Wow. Now you're making me think. I don't know. You know, there was, and I don't know if this is really exactly what you're looking for, but at one point, and I was thinking about it this morning because I just got my first fresh black winter truffles in from France. And also, we're coming up on our 20th anniversary, so I've really been contemplating the food that I used to do years ago, and of the restaurant, the 20th anniversary of the restaurant. And I used to do grilled cheese on brioche with Keen's cheddar and truffles and an espresso cup or a small cup of tomato bisque.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about it this morning, and I don't know that it's exactly right for where I cook every day, but I really kind of want to do that dish just once again, because it is so satisfying and I love it so much. And I think, you know, you say, I don't know.
It sounds like a pretty good New Year's Eve amuse-bouche.
Oh gosh. It is. And you know, when you make brioche and it's so buttery and eggy and light and amazing. Brioche is an amazing dough. I am absolutely in love with brioche when it's executed well. And to make, you know, a little, if you will, sandwich out of that and put a fantastic piece of Irish cheddar in the center, any kind of great cheese that has, you know, this Keen's cheddar has this like amazing celery tone to it. Cellar like cellar the earth. And it's just an incredibly well-made piece of cheese. And it's the only cheese this family makes. And it just imparts great flavor and makes this kind of amazing dish, grilled cheese sandwich with this. And then, you know, you have the best truffles at the best time of the year. And to make a tomato bisque is really quite simple. I do a little bit of shallot, tiny bit of garlic, a little bit of onion, gently sweat it, no color. Add a tiny bit of light chicken stock, good pureed tomato, a tiny bit of Tabasco, salt and pepper, and then a very little bit of cream, and puree it, strain it. It's gorgeous. And you want to, when you make something like a tomato bisque, you want to have some balance to it. The cream is there to help round out that acidity that's inherent in the tomatoes.
So, interesting email. I am dating an Italian, and her family is coming over for Christmas Eve dinner.
Oh, how nice. That's wonderful.
I want to attempt to make a traditional feast of seven fishes.
Oh, wow.
How can I keep seven fishes from getting boring? Well, that's a good question, because I think you have to be, when you plan that menu, you have to be strategic. It's not, you want to do it in the format of an Italian menu. So antipasti, pasta, and main course, right? So, you know, antipasti, primo, secondo. So the antipasti is an opportunity to do different things, both hot and cold. You can do something fried there. You can do something a crudo there.
Absolutely.
You know, those are great to start with. So you could do something lightly pickled there.
What's the point of the set? Just, I mean, the in case someone doesn't
fishes?
Know. Yes, quickly.
It's just Christmas Eve. It's a very traditional Italian way to celebrate birth of
Christ.
Is
it seven different
types fishes.
Of fish? Or?
But it's sea. I mean, it's seafood. It's not.
Okay.
It does not have to be.
It doesn't have to all be fish.
So it could be. It could be grilled mussels with Calabrian chilies.
Oh yeah.
To give you something spicy.
Oh my! I want that
it
right now.
It could be. It could be. You know, fried. It could be fried calamari and lemon peel and you know, like a grapefruit mayonnaise or something.
Well, there's nothing boring about that at all. That's going to be fun.
The pasta you want to be thoughtful about. Remember, a traditional Italian pasta, don't put cheese.
Right.
What? Just don't.
Right.
You think about it, just don't. Don't have it around. Especially if you're trying to impress the in-laws. Like, you know, what you think might be in-laws. Like, yeah, just give all the cheese to your neighbors. Okay, let's just don't.
No. Okay, so pasta with...
So pasta, and pasta is not a bad place for a change of pace. Yours is nice to have a luxury ingredient of some sort. Pasta with spaghetti, if you preserved any tomatoes, with preserved tomato and chilies and, you know, maybe you grilled those lobsters or something like that. That's a pretty simple mise en place to put together, easy stock to make, to finish that pasta with. You know, fresh-made spaghetti with that, fantastic.
Yeah, that's
and then you just need nice, meaty fish. Maybe it's branzino, maybe it's orata. You want one of the Mediterranean oily fish. That's the kind of menu I think I've just given you, like 8 fishes. So
that's great. That would be fun.
So there we go. All right, let's move on to a call from Lily in Ellicott City. Lily, how are you?
I have a question. When I'm baking, I have a kosher home, so historically I would substitute for the butter, I would substitute margarine. Can't do that anymore, so I substitute these baking sticks by Earthbound. They're soy products, but it says, you know, great for baking. So I cream the butter and the sugar, and then these baking sticks together, and then I add in eggs, you know, one at a time, and everything's room temperature, and it kind of coagulates. It doesn't incorporate really well and increase, you know, fluff up nicely. It just kind of like just coagulates. Mm-hmm. And I tried to do that also when I made a buttercream icing, and the same thing happened. So, you know, what do you think?
I am not sure because I've never tried to make it. It's hard for me to answer. I honestly do not know what a solution would be for you, but I understand what you're saying completely.
Yeah, the magic of margarine is that it is emulsified incredibly well.
Yeah.
So it will behave like butter in baking applications.
Margarine was great.
I almost hate to say this, but can you use Crisco?
Yes. And I have used, but the only thing is how much Crisco do I use?
Yeah, that's.
I mean, baking is always
similar.
By weight. It's always by weight.
Yeah,
so,
it's
you
probably
know, you
pretty.
It by weight.
It's pretty similar. I would expect to your use of butter.
If it's 8 ounces of butter in the recipe, 8 ounces of Crisco.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
Oh,
but
I thought it had less water in it or something than butter.
I can't guarantee that, but I think I would at least try it. Maybe just try a small recipe and give it a shot and see what happens. But I think that's the direction
that's
I would go. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's a good
Very
idea.
Good.
Maybe what I'll do is do start adding taking away some of those vegan sticks and adding some Crisco to it and see if I get the right ratio.
I think I'd take those vegan sticks and throw them at some of the neighbors.
Oh, my.
That sounds very. That sounds very frustrating.
Lily.
Yeah, they are.
Well, all
they
the
are,
best.
Sorry, I should encourage you to act out. Sorry.
Happy.
That's a great idea.
Happy day
Thank
to you.
Thank you so much.
All right. Good baking.
Bye.
Well, when we come back on Formula Wolf on Food and Wine, I'll try not to encourage listeners to act out We are, however, live and taking your calls, 410-662-8780. Love to sneak in another one or two. And then we get down to the Chef's Challenge. Good luck, Chef Cindy Wolf on WIPR. Welcome back to Foreman and Wolf on Food and Wine. I'm Tony Foreman.
And Chef Cindy Wolf.
So I think we have a caller who's ready for us. Deirdre?
Yes.
Glen Burnie, how are you?
Hey, Deirdre, how are you today?
I'm doing well.
Good.
So what happened?
Well, my worst thing that I ever made, I know exactly what I did wrong. We'd moved and things had gotten moved around and someone had put a jar of cornmeal into the kitchen, which is where you'd think it would be. And I made my first polenta. Unfortunately, that jar was the jar of cornmeal that I had mixed with ivory snowflakes. This tells you how long ago it was, as a body scrub.
Wow.
And we took the first bite, looked at each other, and spit it out and ordered pizza. It was just horrible.
Oh, my gosh.
May I ask you a personal question?
Of course.
Do you have kids?
I do now. One.
Oh, I was going to say, at that time, did they realize
no,
you were making
was,
them wash their
college.
Mouths out with soap?
It was college.
Oh, wow. Wait, so what did you do with the ivory snow and the cornmeal?
You mix them together and use them as a body scrub.
Wow.
In the shower.
I didn't remember that. That's kind of cool, actually. That's a good little tip there. Do they still make ivory snow?
No. Sadly, no. I used to use that. I used to whip it up with water and make a foam and use it to make snow in the windows.
That's awesome.
I used ivory snow for a lot of things, and
oh
they don't
gosh.
Make it anymore.
Huh.
But the meal that I am probably most proud of, again, I moved. This time I moved in my early 30s out to California to live with some friends. And it was the end of October, and it wasn't until I got there that I realized that the guys had no oven that worked. They're like, well, we just, use the kettle on the stove and the microwave.
Oh, no.
And I'm like, what are you going to do for Thanksgiving? And they're like, we go out to the bar and they serve a Thanksgiving there. I'm like,
that's
no.
Awesome.
No.
That just sounds amazing to me right
not.
Now. Sorry.
So I ended up doing the potatoes and the peas and the squash and the mushrooms and onions and sour cream, which I could do all on the stovetop. But then for the main dish, I ended up doing a turkey and pork cutlets braised in cranberries and pears.
Oh, boy. Well, good for you.
And
way to turn that around. Golly.
Yeah, they had
right
thirds.
On.
That's awesome. Now, did you go to the bar with them later?
Oh, of course.
Thanks so much
You're
for
awesome.
Calling, Deirdre.
Thank you.
My pleasure.
Have a good day.
I love your show.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. All right, so here we go.
Right.
Chef Challenge.
Can we get like dramatic theme music for the Chef's Challenge?
Oh, come on. Chorizo Iberico.
Luke, can we?
Aged 40 months. Several partridge. Oh, do I have a situation that I have to hear
your
about?
Your situation is trying to make some food.
Okay. Several partridges. This is interesting. Asian pears, kumquats, rosemary, pancetta. It's always a challenge for me to read Tony's handwriting. Hedgehog, mushrooms, Parmigiano Reggiano, stone milled grits, celery root. Dozen Malpec oysters. Interesting. Shallots, onion, garlic. Oh my gosh, we have sort of similar lists, Tony. This is funny. No, not really. Oh, that gave you a heads up. Aged cider vinegar, citrus, pineapple? Really? Does that say pineapple?
It sure
you
does.
You gave me pineapple?
Yeah.
You know how much I love that. Hazelnuts.
It's a symbol of hospitality.
From Piemonte. Yeah, like in a statue. All right. I love chorizo iberico. I have to think about this for a second. Wow. Fascinating radio right now. Okay, so chorizo iberico is amazing to eat, obviously, as it is thinly sliced, but I'm absolutely going to put a small plate out. It's aged 40 months. It's going to be absolutely incredible. But I do want to do a little bit of it cut into a Brunoise, which is the smallest of dice. I'm going to mix it with a little bit of the Asian pears, which I'll also do in a Brunoise. And then I'll wash the kumquats, cut them in half. You have to pull the seeds out. The kumquats are a little difficult to work with. But I think if I work all that around in a pan with a little bit of rosemary and a little bit of pancetta, and quite frankly, I'm going to knock out a whole bunch of these ingredients all at once because those hedgehog mushrooms would also be really good with all of that. And I'm going to roast my partridges whole. Wash them out, pat them dry, put a little bit of that rosemary in the cavity, a little bit of the garlic in the cavity, and rub a little bit of salt, pepper, and corn oil on the outside of the birds. Roast them in a high temperature oven for about 10 minutes and then crank it down to let them roast gently to finish. I'm going to aim for medium with the partridges, and I'm going to present them on a platter. I'm assuming this is a holiday meal with all of the beautiful stuff that I just talked about, the Asian pears, the kumquats, the pancetta, the hedgehogs. That will lay on the bottom of the platter, and the partridges will sit on top, and then I'll debone them or slice, I guess sort of slice them at the table. And the grits will go out as a bowl of grits on the side, and that is made with milk, a tiny bit of butter, and salt. Stone milled grits take about 40 minutes to cook on very, very low heat in a very good heavy pan with a stainless steel interior. So stir them. The more you stir grits while you're cooking them, the better they're going to be. They're going to work their starch out. They're going to just really be gorgeous. The celery root, the Malpec oysters, that's easy. That will be first course. That will be ready for guests as they walk in. They'll be open. And I'll make a little bit of vinegar for them, the cider vinegar and a little bit of finely chopped shallot that you have here. And I'm going to roast those pineapples. So my dessert's going to be this pineapple. I will leave them whole, core them, cut the outside off, get the eyes out, but otherwise leave them whole. I'm going to make a syrup with simple syrup with vanilla bean, sugar, water, and baste them with that and a little bit of butter as they roast in the oven. And the hazelnuts from Piemonte, I will roast in the oven near the end of the process of roasting those pineapples in an absolutely separate container or roasting pan. Then I will pull the hazelnuts out, crack them. I will make a very simple vanilla bean ice cream that I don't have any ingredients for, but I will make it anyway. And I will slice that pineapple, serve it. Yeah, cream. Yeah. I will slice that pineapple. Use the roasting juices and have that vanilla ice cream and those cracked hazelnuts on top. I did it. Now, do we have enough time for you, Tony? Here you go.
Probably. We'll see.
Here you go.
All right. What sort of fun stuff?
That's funny. You're going to...
Two goose, two duck, six quail, all whole with the heads on. Okay.
So you're cooking at your house for Christmas.
Do I have to pluck them?
Yes.
Okay, I hope I got them the day before.
You did.
I hope I had a chance to hang the goose for a while. The goose, geez Louise. If it was me and his goose for Christmas, I want to get them like 5 or 6 days ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to deal with all these things at one time. And two goose are a lot of food. Especially if
Did I not rewrite on there the fact that you're cooking for 12 people on Christmas at your house?
You did, but that's a lot of food.
Okay.
I mean, what I would want to do is make rillette with the legs from the geese.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's with just plenty of garlic and some onion. And you just render a little bit of fat and get it going. Heavy pan, long time on the range. Just keep pulling apart with a fork as it cooks. And add a tiny little bit of vinegar or white wine. Just give it a little breakdown as it goes along. But that's a bit of a chore. And it's funny. It's like monotonous labor intensive. It's not hard labor intensive. It's just monotonous labor intensive. But that rillette with about 3-4 days of aging in a jar, sealed under its fat, will be, mm-hmm. Seasoned properly with plenty of salt, will be amazing. That's a great snack. So you can put that rillette out with the Iberico ham. I'm going to save all the nuts. You give me all kinds of stuff. Apples, pears, cranberry, Iberico ham, walnuts, hazelnuts, chestnuts, celery, shallots, brioche, orange, lime, lemon, pomegranate, 2 pounds of ground pork. La bomba rice, chicken veal stock, rosemary, thyme, parsley, a bag of local oysters. Yeah, snack and stone crab claws. Okay, well, snack time's easy. You know, that's you make a mustard mayonnaise for a Dijon mustard mayonnaise for the stone crab claws and stand there and dip those guys with the goose rillettes and the Iberico ham sliced out. The Iberico ham with extra virgin olive oil and pomegranate seeds is always fantastic.
That's going to be a great starting group.
That's great. Oof. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to go to that Christmas.
The walnuts, hazelnuts, and chestnuts, I just want to roast them all and crack them all after the meal with...
Yeah, I was thinking about that too.
A great bottle of Madeira, port, mm-hmm. You know, a couple of good guys like that. The brioche, I want for nothing but bread. That's basically bread service. Or you could have that as like the one sweet kind of thing. Make a little simple syrup with some of that orange peel. And, you know, brulee the orange peel, make the simple syrup with that sugar out of that pan, and then baste the brioche slices with that and bake that in the oven. Give it a little bit of creme fraiche. If mm-hmm. I don't have creme fraiche. Okay, don't give it creme fraiche. Apples and pears, I'm not going to play with. Maybe some apples, especially if they're the Good Pink Lady apples of this year, with ham as part of the garnish and the pears. Let them ripen a little more. The two duck and the six quail, and I've got goose breasts to deal with. I mean, what I want for main course are the goose breasts. You have to serve them pretty rare. You've got mm-hmm. to cook them at a pretty high heat. You got to season them very, very well. And you need to slice them very, very thin. But a couple of platters of those guys, maybe with celery and shallot and cranberries roasted, literally roasted right in there with it. And a little bit of lemon, some stock reduction with fresh thyme. That makes sense. What else? The quail I'm going to put in the freezer, otherwise they're going to be a waste. Duck, the same thing. I have a lot of snacks, and I have that whole all those geese to deal with. Mm-hmm. I'm going to save the ducks for Boxing Day. I'm going to save the quail for New Year's. Sorry. Although, before I freeze them, those guys, I'm going to take the heads off, because that won't go well. But keep the feet on. They have good flavor. And I think I'm mostly... I didn't deal with your pork, and I didn't deal with the rice.
Apparently you don't like my list.
No, I like your list, but it's a mountain of food. Well, it's a mountain of food. And, like, I could do a rice with the quail, with that ground pork. The ground pork could also just be made into a sausage with... You know, I mean, it's like this... Mm-hmm. You give me all kinds of fun mm-hmm. stuff. It's just more than I can do a concise meal with.
Okay.
So... Anyway, but yeah, that's an awesome list. If you want to drop that stuff by, I'd be super happy. So, well, thanks for your calls and your emails.
Yes.
I think that's about all we have time for on Foreman & Wolf on Food & Wine. If you want to follow Chef Cindy Wolf on social media, you can reach her...
On Instagram as Chef Wolf, on Twitter, Chef Cindy Wolf.
My Instagram is The Real Tony Foreman. If you want to email the program, it's foremanwolf@wypr.org. And from the WYPR website, you can go to the Foreman & Wolf page and download podcasts of this or any other programs over the last couple of years. And thanks for listening.
Happy Sunday.